Rain lashed against the warped glass of the Stag and Thistle, drowning out the drunken arguments in the tap room. A man stood in the doorway, water pooling at his mud-caked boots. His coat was threadbare, his shoulders bowed beneath an invisible, crushing weight. He smelled of wet earth, horse sweat, and profound exhaustion. He laid 3 tarnished copper coins on the scratched oak counter, asking for the smallest cot in the attic. Beatrice swept the coins away, handing him an iron key. Beatrice scrubbed the bar until the tendons in her wrist screamed. The damp rag in her hand smelled of sour ale, oxidized brass, and the lingering greasy scent of mutton stew. It was a smell deeply embedded in her clothes, her hair, and her skin, the permanent perfume of a woman fighting a losing battle against rot. The taproom was suffocatingly close. A damp peat fire smoldered in the hearth, refusing to catch, bleeding thin, acrid smoke into a room already thick with the breath of 20 unwashed merchants and local drunks. Beatrice ignored them. She survived by making herself a fixture of the room, as unfeeling and solid as the scarred oak counter she stood behind. Empathy was a luxury she couldn't afford. Pity was a direct route to bankruptcy. Then the door opened. It didn't bang against the wall with the boisterous arrival of a wool trader, nor did it creak open hesitantly like a beggar seeking a warm corner. It opened with quiet, deliberate finality. The wind howled through the gap, rattling the pewter mugs hanging above the bar, but the man who stepped inside seemed entirely unaffected by the gale. He shut the door behind him, cutting off the storm. Water sluiced from the brim of his ruined felt hat. His greatcoat, heavy with rain, clung to a frame that was broad but visibly hollowed by hunger or miles. Probably both. He stood near the entrance, not shivering, just dripping quietly onto the floorboards she had swept an hour ago. Beatrice felt a familiar spike of irritation. Another vagabond. Another hard luck story she would have to turn back out into the freezing mud. He approached the bar. As he moved into the dim, jaundiced light of the tallow candles, she saw his face. It was a rough landscape of shadows, a jagged, poorly healed scar cut through the stubble on his jaw, and his eyes were a flat, bruised gray. They weren't the eyes of a dangerous man looking for a fight, nor were they the pleading eyes of a beggar. They were simply dead. Completely, fundamentally exhausted. He didn't speak immediately. He reached into the deep pocket of his coat. His hand was freezing red, dirt packed beneath the fingernails, but the fingers themselves were long, the knuckles unbattered. It wasn't a farmer's hand. He placed 3 copper coins onto the wet wood. The metal clinked, a hollow, pathetic sound over the din of the taproom. "The attic," he said. His voice was a low rasp, ruined by cold air, yet the consonants were clipped, too sharp. Too precise for a man wearing a coat held together by mud and frayed twine. "The smallest cot you have. I only need a roof." Beatrice stared at the copper coins. 3 pennies. It wouldn't even cover a bowl of the watery stew boiling in the kitchen, let alone a bed. By all her own rules, she should slide the coins back, point to the door, and return to scrubbing the bar. The Stag and Thistle was drowning in debt. The local magistrate was threatening to seize the property for back taxes. She needed silver, not charity cases. She looked from the coins to his face. He wasn't looking at her with expectation. He was looking at the floor, perfectly prepared for the rejection. He had already accepted it. Something ugly and uncomfortable twisted in Beatrice's chest. It wasn't a warm flutter of compassion. It was a furious, irrational rebellion against the sheer misery radiating from him. She hated it. She hated him for bringing it into her tavern. Before her brain could catch up with her hands, Beatrice swept the 3 coppers into her apron pocket. She reached beneath the counter, ignoring the heavy brass ring that held the keys to the drafty attic cots. Instead, her fingers closed around a single, ornate iron key. She slapped it down on the bar. "Room 4, she said, her voice entirely flat. "Top of the stairs, end of the hall. Don't bleed on the sheets, and if you have lice, I'll charge you for the mattress." The man looked at the key, then up at her. For a fraction of a second, the dead gray of his eyes fractured. Confusion flickered there, sharp and vivid. Room 4 was the oak room. It had a feather bed, a sealed window that didn't rattle, and its own small hearth. It was meant for traveling gentry. It rented for 2 shillings a night. "I cannot afford room 4," he said quietly.
"I don't remember asking for your financial ledger," Beatrice snapped, scrubbing fiercely at an invisible stain on the wood. "The attic roof caved in this morning. The cots are buried in wet thatch. It's room 4, the stables, and the horses don't like company. Take the key before I change my mind." He hesitated. A profound internal war seemed to wage behind his eyes, pride fighting a losing battle against bone-deep exhaustion. Slowly, his long fingers reached out and took the key.
"Thank you," he murmured. He turned and walked toward the stairs. Beatrice watched him go, noting the slight limp in his left leg. The moment he was out of sight, she cursed herself softly, viciously. 3 coppers for the oak room. She was a fool. A soft-headed, sentimental idiot who was going to freeze in the poorhouse. She scrubbed the bar until her knuckles bled, furious at the stranger, furious at the storm, and entirely furious at herself. Morning at the Stag and Thistle always smelled of old grease, damp ashes, and regret. Beatrice was awake before the sun, her hands plunged into a bucket of freezing water as she peeled potatoes. Her back ached, a dull, familiar throb at the base of her spine. The storm had passed, leaving behind a bruised, gray sky and a courtyard deep in churning mud. The tavern was quiet. The drunks had crawled to their beds or passed out in the stables. She expected the stranger to be gone. Men like that, men running from something, carrying the kind of weariness that seeped into the floorboards, usually slipped away before dawn, eager to put miles between themselves and wherever they had slept. She told herself she was glad. She had given him the good bed. Her conscience was clear. Now she could get back to the brutal arithmetic of survival. Then she heard the creak of the stairs. She paused, the paring knife hovering over a potato. Heavy, measured footsteps crossed the tap room. She wiped her hands on her apron and pushed through the swinging door of the kitchen. He was sitting at a small table in the corner, farthest from the windows. In the pale morning light, he looked worse than the night before. His coat was drying, stiff with mud, and the deep circles under his eyes looked like bruises. But his posture was entirely wrong for a beggar. He sat with his spine perfectly straight, his hands resting lightly on the scarred wood of the table, composed and entirely still. Beatrice marched over, slapping a wooden bowl of oat porridge down in front of him.
"Breakfast costs extra," she lied. He didn't flinch at her tone. He looked down at the gray, lumpy porridge as if she had just served him roasted pheasant. "It looks wonderful. Thank you."
He picked up the wooden spoon. Beatrice lingered, wiping down the adjacent table, watching him from the corner of her eye. He ate deliberately, without the frantic animal shoveling she saw in hungry travelers. He held the crude wooden spoon with an odd elegance, lifting it to his mouth without hunching over the bowl. It was maddening. He was a walking contradiction. "Roof didn't cave in," he said suddenly. Beatrice froze, her rag halting on the tabletop. "What?" He didn't look up from his bowl. "The attic. I looked up the stairwell this morning. The ceiling is perfectly intact." He took another bite of porridge. "Why did you give me the oak room?" Caught in a lie, Beatrice felt heat rise in her cheeks. She doubled down on her hostility, turning to face him fully, hands planted on her hips. "Because I didn't want you dying of pneumonia in my rafters. A corpse is bad for business. The magistrate charges a fee for hauling away dead vagabonds, and I didn't want to pay it." A faint, dry sound escaped his throat. It took her a second to realize it was a chuckle. It was a rusted, unused sound. He reached into his pocket and withdrew his hand, placing something on the table. He slid it across the wood toward her. Beatrice looked down. It was a silver shilling. Not a clipped piece, not a worn groat, but a heavy, unblemished silver coin. The profile of the king gleamed up at her. It was enough to pay for the oak room for a week. I require the room for another night, he said quietly. If it pleases you. Beatrice stared at the coin. She wanted to snatch it up, to bite it to ensure it wasn't lead painted white. But she forced her hands to remain on her hips. Where did a man with a coat like that get a coin like this? I traded my horse for it, he said, his voice entirely devoid of emotion. Beatrice frowned. You came here on foot. I walked the last 20 miles. The horse could go no further. He finally looked up at her, meeting her gaze. His eyes were still that flat, bruised gray, but there was a sharp intelligence behind them now. The silver is real, mistress. It is not stolen. You have my word. Your word, she scoffed, though she finally reached out and snatched the coin, dropping it into her deep pocket where it sat heavy and cold against her thigh. The word of a man who doesn't even have a name, Alistair, he said simply. Well, Alistair, you can keep the room, but if you start causing trouble, I'll throw you out myself. She turned and marched back to the kitchen, her heart beating a little too fast. The silver shilling bumped against her leg with every step, a heavy reminder that the man in her tavern was a puzzle she had no business trying to solve. But as she plunged her hands back into the freezing water to peel the rest of the potatoes, she realized something disturbing. She was acutely aware of the fact that he was still sitting out there. The tavern felt different with him in it. He took up no space, made no noise, demanded nothing. Yet his presence was a heavy, grounding weight in a building that had felt like it was floating away from her for years. 3 days passed, then a week. Alistair did not leave. He paid his silver shilling, ate the meager meals she provided without a single word of complaint, and kept entirely to himself. He was a ghost haunting the Stag and Thistle, visible only when he chose to be. Beatrice tried to ignore him. She had a tavern to run, ale to water down, and a ledger full of red ink to stare at until her eyes crossed. Yet her awareness of him grew like a slow-burning ember in a drafty room. It started with the shutters. The heavy oak shutter on the front window had hung loose for 6 months, banging violently against the stone wall whenever the wind picked up. Beatrice had tried to fix it twice, but the rusted iron hinge was stripped, and she lacked the strength to drill a new hole into the stone. She had learned to sleep through the banging, accepting it as just another piece of the tavern's slow decay. On his 8th day, Beatrice came down the stairs to find the tavern door propped open. A cold, crisp breeze blew through the taproom. She frowned, tying her apron, ready to shout at whichever merchant had left it open. Instead, she saw Alistair. He was standing on a wooden crate outside the window, his ruined coat discarded over a chair. He wore only a rough linen shirt, the sleeves rolled up past his elbows. He held a heavy iron mallet in one hand and an iron spike in the other. Beatrice stopped in the doorway, staring. He wasn't a large man, but the muscles in his forearms coiled and tightened with absolute precision as he swung the mallet. Clang. The sound rang out, sharp and bright in the morning air. He wasn't flailing. Every strike was measured, powerful, and exact. He drove the spike into the mortar, securing a new bracket he had somehow procured. She stood there, watching the sweat bead on the back of his neck despite the chill in the air. He smelled of cold wind, rusted iron, and male exertion, a sharp, clean scent that cut right through the stale odors of the inn. He finished driving the spike, tested the shutter, and swung it closed. It latched with a satisfying, solid thud. No rattle. He stepped down from the crate and finally noticed her standing there. He froze, the mallet hanging loosely in his hand. He looked like a wild animal caught in a trap, expecting to be struck. I didn't ask you to do that, Beatrice said. Her voice was harsher than she intended, a defense mechanism against the strange flutter in her stomach. It was keeping you awake, Alistair replied softly. I sleep fine. You sleep on your left side, and you turn over every time it bangs against the stone, he said. It wasn't an accusation. It was a simple statement of fact. The floors are thin. I can hear you pacing at night. The banging wasn't helping. Beatrice felt a flush creep up her neck. The idea that he was lying in the oak room in the dark, listening to her restless movements, was intensely intimate. It felt like an intrusion, yet she couldn't summon the anger to yell at him.
"Where did you get the bracket?" she asked instead, crossing her arms over her chest. "The blacksmith in the village. I traded an hour of labor at the bellows for it." He wiped his brow with the back of a dirty hand, leaving a streak of soot across his forehead. "I can't pay you for the work," she warned him, her tone defensive. "Your silver covers the room and the food. I don't have coin for a handyman." "I did not ask for coin, Beatrice."
It was the first time he had used her name. The syllables felt strange in his mouth, formal and careful, as if he were holding a fragile glass. He picked up his heavy coat and slung it over his shoulder. As he moved past her to re-enter the tavern, the collar of his linen shirt shifted. A dull silver chain caught the morning light, slipping out from beneath the fabric. At the end of the chain hung a heavy signet ring. Beatrice caught only a glimpse of it before it vanished back under his shirt. But a glimpse was enough. The ring was massive, cast in gold, with a complex crest deeply engraved into a blood-red stone. That was not a merchant's ring. It certainly wasn't a vagabond's ring. It was the kind of ring used to seal wax on documents that started wars or sold estates. She swallowed hard, taking a step back as he passed. "Alistair," she said. He stopped, turning his head slightly. "Yes? Who are you hiding from?" The air between them suddenly felt suffocatingly heavy. The quiet morning seemed to stretch, pulling tight like a wire about to snap. Alistair didn't look at her. He stared straight ahead at the dim interior of the tap room, at the scarred tables and the cold hearth. For a long moment, Beatrice thought he wouldn't answer. She thought he would put on his mask of dead exhaustion and walk upstairs.
"Myself, mostly," he said, his voice barely a whisper. "And the men who expect me to be someone I can no longer stomach." He didn't wait for her to respond. He walked into the shadows of the inn, taking the stairs to the oak room with his slow, heavy limp. Beatrice stood in the doorway, the cold wind biting at her cheeks, staring at the perfectly fixed shutter. He was trouble, deep, catastrophic trouble, the kind of trouble that wore gold signet rings and paid in heavy silver. She was a pragmatic woman. She knew the smart thing to do was to pack his bags, leave them on the road, and bar the door.
But as she walked inside and closed the door, noticing the absolute blessed silence where the rattling shutter used to be, she knew she wasn't going to throw him out. She was going to let the ruin into her home, and she was terrified to realize she didn't want him to leave. The ledger smelled of damp paper and desperation. Beatrice sat at the corner table, rubbing the bridge of her nose until a dull ache settled between her eyes. The numbers did not change, no matter how fiercely she glared at them.
9 shillings, 4 pence. That was the deficit. The tap room was empty, the mid-afternoon lull wrapping the inn in a thick, dusty silence. The fire had died down to sullen orange coals. The heavy front door shoved open, scraping harshly against the floorboards. Magistrate Finch stepped inside. He was a man made of sharp angles and sour smells. He brought the scent of cheap snuff and wet wool into the room, his boots tracking thick, yellow clay across the boards Beatrice had scrubbed an hour prior. He didn't look at her. He looked at the beams, the tables, the pewter mugs, assessing their auction value.
"Rent is due, Beatrice," Finch said. His voice was a nasal whine that set her teeth on edge. He slapped a leather-bound book onto her clean table.
"It's Tuesday, Finch. Taxes aren't collected until Friday," Beatrice said, her voice tight. She stood up, instinctively placing herself between the magistrate and her ledger, blocking his view of her ruined math.
"The Crown had advanced the collection date for the district. The war in the East requires funding." Finch tapped a blunt, dirty fingernail against his book. 9 shillings, 4 pence, plus a penny for the late fee because I had to walk through the mud to get here." A cold, heavy stone dropped into Beatrice's gut. 9 shillings. She had Alistair's silver, yes, but that had gone entirely to the baker and the brewer to keep the taps flowing and the hearth stocked. She had 3 pennies to her name.
"I don't have it today," she said, stripping the emotion from her voice. She refused to plead. Pleading with Finch was like bleeding in front of a starving dog. Come back Friday. Finch smiled. It was a terrible, wet expression. I can't do that, Beatrice. The decree is clear. Seizure of assets for non-payment. I warned you last month. This rotting shack isn't worth the mud it sits on, but the land is.
The cooper down the lane wants to expand his yard. Beatrice's hands gripped the edge of the table. The wood bit into her palms. The Stag and Thistle was a miserable draft-swept tomb, but it was hers. It was the only thing standing between her and a beggar's alley. I will have the coin by Friday, she repeated, her voice dropping to a dangerous, low octave. You will pack your bags by sunset, Finch countered, reaching into his coat to produce a folded writ. The lady told you to return on Friday. The voice came from the stairwell. It wasn't loud, but it cut through the taproom like a drawn blade. Finch flinched, spinning around. Beatrice exhaled a breath she hadn't realized she was holding. Alistair descended the stairs. He wore the same rough linen shirt and trousers, but he moved differently now. The crippling exhaustion of his arrival had faded into a coiled, terrifying stillness. He didn't limp today. He walked with a heavy, measured cadence that made the floorboards groan in protest. He stopped a few feet from Finch. Beside the magistrate, Alistair looked like a wolf standing next to a rat. And who are you? Finch sneered, though he took a half step backward. Another one of her charity cases? The Crown doesn't care about vagabonds. Mind your business. Alistair didn't look at Finch. He looked at the floor, specifically at the yellow mud Finch had tracked in. Then slowly, he raised his eyes. Beatrice shivered. The bruised gray of Alistair's eyes had gone entirely flat. It was a look of absolute chilling authority, the look of a man who had stared down violent men and broken them. You tracked mud onto a floor she spent the morning cleaning, Alistair said softly. I am a magistrate of the Crown, Finch sputtered, his face flushing dark red. I'm here on official... You are a petty clerk drunk on a fraction of stolen power, Alistair interrupted. He didn't raise his voice. He didn't need to. You altered the collection date to force a foreclosure for your friend the cooper. You are extorting a woman who works until her hands bleed. Alistair reached into his pocket. He pulled out a small, heavy leather pouch. He untied the drawstring with one hand, his eyes never leaving Finch's face. He tipped the pouch over the table. Two heavy gold coins spilled out. Sovereigns. They clattered against the wood, the sound impossibly loud. Finch stared at the gold, his mouth slightly open. Beatrice stared too, her heart slamming against her ribs. That was a year's wages. Take your 9 shillings, Alistair said. Bring the change back within the hour. If you do not, I will ride to the provincial capital, find the governor, and have you audited. I imagine an audit would go very poorly for a man who buys writs of seizure for personal gain. Finch looked from the gold to Alistair's face. Whatever he saw there completely broke his nerve. He snatched one of the gold coins with a trembling, greedy hand, abandoning the writ on the table. He didn't say a word. He practically scrambled out the door, throwing it open and fleeing into the cold air. Silence descended on the taproom. Beatrice looked at the remaining gold coin, then at the writ, and finally at Alistair. The fury in his eyes had evaporated, replaced instantly by the familiar heavy weariness. He turned to walk back to the stairs. I didn't ask for your charity, Beatrice snapped. Her voice shook. She hated the tremor. She hated the overwhelming, crushing relief that made her knees weak. Alistair stopped, his hand on the banister. He didn't look back. It wasn't charity, Beatrice, he said quietly. It was rent. The fire snapped, spitting a glowing ember onto the stone hearth. Beatrice watched it die, the bright orange fading into a dull gray cinder. It was past midnight. The tavern was locked. A vicious frost had descended on the valley, painting the windows in thick, swirling patterns of ice. Beatrice sat in the high-backed wooden chair nearest the hearth, a ragged woolen blanket pulled over her lap. She wasn't alone.
Alistair sat on the opposite side of the fire, occupying a stool that seemed entirely too small for him. He was sharpening a kitchen knife. The rhythmic shh-shh of the whetstone against the steel was the only sound in the room. He worked with methodical, mindless precision, his gaze fixed on the flames.
Beatrice held a mug of mulled cider, nursing it to warm her frozen fingers. The heavy gold sovereign sat in her apron pocket, a burning reminder of the debt she now owed this stranger. It made her skin itch. "Why do you carry a king's ransom in your pocket, yet wear a coat held together by string?" she asked. The question slipped out before she could bite it back. The rhythmic scraping stopped. Alistair wiped the blade on a rag, testing the edge with his thumb.
"Because a coat marks a man," he said, his voice a low rumble over the crackling fire. "Gold only marks his usefulness."
Beatrice scoffed, taking a sip of the cider. It was too sweet, masking the poor quality of the apples.
"Spoken like a man who has never had to choose between a coat and a meal." Alistair looked up. The firelight cast long, flickering shadows across his face, highlighting the jagged scar on his jaw. "You assume much about me, Mistress Beatrice."
"I don't have to assume. You reek of it," she said bluntly.
Empathy was dangerous. Anger was familiar. She leaned forward, the blanket slipping from her knee.
"You know how to command a room. You wear a signet ring heavy enough to sink a ship. And you throw gold at provincial magistrates without blinking. You're gentry. Or a lord."
He didn't flinch. He didn't deny it. He set the knife and the whetstone on the floor and leaned his forearms on his knees, staring into the fire.
"A lord," he repeated.
The word sounded like poison in his mouth. "A lord is a ledger, an accounting of acres, livestock, and the blood of the men he sends to die for borders drawn by men who have never seen the mud." Beatrice stayed quiet. The bitterness in his voice was vast. It wasn't the petty complaining of a spoiled aristocrat. It was a deep, festering wound. "3 weeks ago," Alistair continued, his voice dropping to a whisper, "I was ordered to burn a village, a border dispute. The villagers hadn't paid their tithe to the crown. They were farmers. They had nothing." He closed his eyes. The muscles in his jaw ticked. "I refused. My commanding officer reminded me of my duty, of my family's honor. He told me that hesitation was treason." Beatrice watched the pulse beating at the base of his throat.
"So you deserted?"
"I broke his jaw," Alistair corrected, opening his eyes. They were stark and hollow.
"I took my horse.
The gold in my desk, and I rode west until the horse collapsed. Then I walked." The silence stretched between them, heavy and suffocating.
Beatrice looked at the rough, calloused hands of a woman who scrubbed floors for pennies, and then at the clean, aristocratic hands of a man who had thrown away a kingdom to save a village. She hated the sudden tightening in her chest. She hated how much she understood him. She stood up abruptly, the wooden chair scraping loudly against the stone floor. She walked over to him, holding out her mug of cider. He looked at the mug, then up at her face, confused.
"Drink it," she ordered. "You look like a corpse."
He hesitated, then reached out. His long fingers brushed against hers as he took the mug. His skin was freezing cold. He took a sip, grimacing slightly at the sugary sweetness, but he didn't hand it back.
"You are a terrible host, Beatrice," he murmured, a faint ghost of a smile pulling at the corner of his scarred mouth.
"I am a survivor," she corrected, stepping back to the safety of her chair. "And so, it seems, are you, but don't think your tragic story buys you free ale. You still owe me for the shutter brackets."
Alistair looked down at the mug, the smile lingering just a second longer.
"Put it on my ledger."
The scream tore through the floorboards like a rusty nail.
Beatrice jerked awake, her heart slamming against her ribs. The attic room was pitch black, the air freezing. For a split second, she thought the inn was under attack. Then the sound came again, a hoarse, animalistic shout, followed by the heavy, violent crash of furniture splintering. Room 4, the oak room. She didn't think.
She threw her legs over the edge of the cot, her bare feet hitting the freezing planks. She didn't bother with a shawl. She grabbed the heavy brass candlestick from her nightstand, more as a weapon than a light source, and sprinted down the narrow stairs to the second floor landing. The door to the oak room was shut, but the sounds of a brutal, unseen struggle leaked from the edges. A heavy thud shook the wall, rattling the plaster. Beatrice slammed her hand against the latch, shoving the door open. The room was bathed in the pale blue light of a full moon. The heavy oak chair was overturned, a ceramic wash basin shattered across the floorboards. Water soaked the rug. Alistair was on the floor, tangled in the heavy linen sheets. He was fighting a war against an invisible enemy. His chest heaved with frantic, ragged gasps. He thrashed violently, his fists striking the floorboards as he tried to claw his way out of the tangled bedding. He was drenched in sweat, his dark hair plastered to his forehead. "No," he choked out, his voice raw, stripped of all its precise refinement. "No, leave them. Don't light it. Damn you, don't light it." Beatrice stood frozen for exactly 1 second. This wasn't the composed lord throwing gold at a magistrate. This was a man drowning in his own mind. She dropped the candlestick. It clattered loudly, but he didn't register the sound. She crossed the room, dropping to her knees on the wet, freezing floorboards beside him. She reached out, intending to shake his shoulder, but the moment her hand touched him, he reacted with terrifying speed. His hand shot out, clamping around her wrist like an iron vise. He jerked her forward, his other hand coming up to shield his face. His eyes snapped open. They were wild, dilated, seeing a burning village instead of the shadowed walls of her inn. Pain flared in Beatrice's wrist. His grip was bone-crushing. "Alistair!" she snapped. She didn't scream. She didn't pull away. She leaned into him, keeping her voice sharp, demanding, and entirely present. "Alistair, stop! Look at me!" he gasped, blinking rapidly, but the panic hadn't receded. He was breathing too fast, suffocating on the cold air. "The fire," he rasped, his grip on her wrist tightening until her fingers went numb. "They lit the roofs." "There is no fire," Beatrice said, her voice dropping to a low, firm anchor. She used her free hand to grip his jaw. She didn't stroke his cheek. She held his face firmly, forcing him to look directly at her. His skin was slick with cold sweat. "You are at the Stag and Thistle. It's freezing. Look at my face. Look at me." He stared at her, his chest hitched. "Smell the air," she ordered. "It smells like wet dust and sour ale, not smoke. You are in my inn. I am Beatrice." Slowly, agonizingly, the violent tension in his body began to crack. The glassy, terrified look in his eyes fractured, replaced by sudden, profound clarity. He looked at the harsh, unyielding lines of Beatrice's face, felt the firm, grounding grip she had on his jaw. He looked down at his own hand. He was crushing her wrist. He let go, as if her skin burned him, scrambling backward until his spine hit the edge of the bed frame. He pulled his knees to his chest, burying his face in his hands. He was trembling violently, the adrenaline crashing out of his system, leaving him entirely hollow. Beatrice stayed on the floor. She rubbed her bruised wrist, feeling the pulse hammering in her veins. She didn't offer a platitude. She didn't tell him it was all right, because it obviously wasn't. She reached over, picked up the heavy woolen blanket he had kicked away, and threw it roughly over his shaking shoulders. "The washbasin costs 4 pence, she said, her voice flat, though her hands were shaking slightly. "You'll be sweeping up the ceramic tomorrow." Alistair let out a sound that was half a sob, half a laugh. He didn't lift his head from his knees, but his trembling began to subside under the weight of the blanket. "I'll sweep it up," he whispered into the dark. Beatrice sat on the cold, wet floorboards beside him, her back against the bed frame. She didn't leave. They sat in the dark, the ruined lord and the hardened innkeeper, listening to the wind howl outside the window, anchored to the world only by the presence of the other. The morning after the night terror tasted of copper and old dust. Beatrice woke in her own narrow cot, her wrist wrapped in a tight, dull ache. She traced the faint purple bruising forming beneath her skin. It looked like a cuff. She didn't bother wrapping it in a bandage. A bandage invited questions, and Beatrice had spent her life avoiding the inquiries of drunkards and merchants. When she descended the stairs to the tap room, she expected to find the oak room empty, the heavy silver shilling left on the table as a parting guilt offering. Instead, she smelled roasting garlic and rendered fat. She pushed through the swinging door of the kitchen. The room was suffocatingly warm, a stark contrast to the freezing tap room. Alistair stood over the massive blackened cast iron stove. He had his sleeves rolled up, revealing the corded muscle of his forearms and a constellation of faded, jagged scars that disappeared beneath the linen of his shirt. He was stirring a massive, dented copper pot with a long wooden spoon. He didn't turn around when the door creaked. "The basin is swept," he said. His voice was rougher than usual, scraped raw by the screaming in the night. "The pieces are in the ash bin. I scrubbed the floorboards, but the water seeped into the wood. It will warp."
"I'll add it to your tab," Beatrice said, her voice flat. She walked to the prep table, picking up a sack of wrinkled onions. "I found salted pork in the cellar," Alistair continued, rhythmic scraping echoing from the pot, "and a sack of dried lentils that the rats haven't quite managed to chew through. It's a campaign recipe. It keeps an army marching on cold mornings." Beatrice stopped, the sack of onions heavy in her hands. She looked at his back. The tension from the night before was gone, replaced by a rigid, hyper-focused energy. He was making himself useful. It was an apology, unspoken and desperate.
"I don't serve breakfast to the locals," she said.
"You should." He finally turned. The shadows beneath his eyes were stark, bruised purple in the harsh light of the kitchen. "The miller's boys walked past an hour ago. They looked frozen, a bowl of hot stew and a piece of yesterday's bread for a copper penny. You'll clear the cellar of old stock and make a profit before noon." Beatrice stared at him. He wasn't acting like a lord hiding from the crown. He was acting like a quartermaster.
She dropped the onions on the table. She walked over to the stove, grabbed a clean wooden spoon, and dipped it into the thick, bubbling brown mass in the copper pot. She blew on it, then tasted it. It was rich, salty, heavy with garlic, and fiercely hot. It was exactly the kind of food a man working in the freezing mud would pay for.
"Needs pepper," she said, tossing the spoon into the wash bucket. Alistair's shoulders dropped a fraction of an inch. The rigid tension in his spine eased. "There is no pepper in your pantry, Beatrice. Only dust and a jar of ancient mustard." "Then we will overcharge the miller's boys to buy some," she replied, turning back to her onions.
They worked in silence for the next 2 hours. It wasn't an awkward silence. It was the synchronized mechanical rhythm of two people entirely focused on survival. When the heavy wooden door of the tavern finally opened, bringing a blast of freezing wind and three shivering farmhands, Beatrice didn't hesitate. She served them the lentil stew. They paid in copper, scraped their bowls clean, and asked for more. By noon, the tavern was louder than it had been in a month. The smell of the stew acted like a beacon in the damp, freezing valley. Alistair stayed in the kitchen, washing the bowls, keeping the fire stoked. He never stepped into the taproom. He remained a ghost, working the bellows of her failing business from the shadows. When the afternoon lull finally hit, Beatrice leaned against the heavy oak bar, exhausted. Her apron was stained with grease, her hands raw from hot water. She reached into her pocket, pulling out a handful of copper and small silver pieces. She counted them on the wood. 12 shillings. She hadn't made 12 shillings in a single day since her father died. The kitchen door swung open. Alistair walked out, carrying a bucket of dirty water. He stopped, looking at the pile of coins on the bar.
"It seems the campaign recipe was successful," he noted.
"It kept them from complaining about the watered-down ale, at least," Beatrice said. She scooped the coins into a leather pouch, pulling the drawstring tight. She looked at him. Really looked at him. He was sweating, covered in soot, and smelling fiercely of garlic and rendered fat. He looked nothing like the terrifying, coiled lord who had threatened Magistrate Finch. He looked entirely human.
"Why are you doing this?" she asked.
The defensive armor she usually wore felt heavy today. The exhaustion was stripping it away. Alistair set the bucket down. He leaned against a support beam, crossing his arms. He looked at the floorboards for a long time.
"Because my hands need a task," he said quietly. "If they are idle, my mind wanders. And my mind is a very dangerous place to wander, Beatrice."
He looked up, meeting her gaze. The bruised gray of his eyes held no secrets. It was a raw, bleeding admission of weakness.
"And," he added, a wry, humorless smile touching his lips, "I broke your wash basin. I'm a man of my debts."
Beatrice looked at the heavy leather pouch in her hand. She thought of the gold sovereign upstairs in her lockbox. She thought of the way his hand had crushed her wrist, not in anger, but in blind, desperate terror.
She walked around the bar. She didn't stop until she was standing inches from him. He didn't pull away, but she saw the slight flinch in his jaw, the instinctual bracing for a blow. She reached out, her fingers brushing the coarse fabric of his sleeve. She didn't pat him. She gripped his arm, a firm, grounding pressure.
"You don't owe me a thing, Alistair," she said, her voice dropping to a fierce, low whisper. "You bought your room. You paid your rent. You don't have to earn your right to breathe in my tavern."
Alistair stared at her hand on his arm. His chest hitched, a sharp, ragged intake of breath. He closed his eyes, leaning the back of his head against the wooden beam.
"You shouldn't be kind to me," he whispered. "It won't end well for either of us."
"I am not kind," Beatrice snapped, letting go of his arm and taking a step back. "I am practical. And practically speaking, you make a decent stew. Now go dump that water before it freezes in the bucket."
She turned and marched back behind the bar, ignoring the erratic, hammering rhythm of her own heart. The storm returned on a Tuesday. It wasn't rain this time, but a bitter, driving sleet that coated the world in a layer of treacherous ice. The tavern was empty. Even the most desperate drunks chose the warmth of their own hovels over the frozen walk to the Stag and Thistle. Beatrice was in the cellar taking inventory of the remaining ale casks when she heard the horses. It wasn't the clumsy, plodding sound of a merchant's wagon. It was the sharp, synchronized clatter of military mounts, iron shoes striking the frozen cobblestones of the courtyard. She froze, the wooden mallet slipping from her grasp and hitting the dirt floor with a dull thud. "The war in the East requires funding," Finch had said. "But soldiers didn't ride through sleet storms to collect taxes. They rode to hunt."
Beatrice scrambled up the narrow wooden stairs, bursting into the kitchen. Alistair was at the prep table, chopping carrots. He stopped the moment she entered. He didn't ask what was wrong. He read the sheer, unadulterated panic in her eyes.
"Soldiers!"
she gasped.
Alistair dropped the knife. It clattered loudly against the wood. The quiet, domestic peace of the kitchen shattered instantly, replaced by the suffocating, terrifying gravity of the outside world. He didn't panic. He simply went entirely still, a predator calculating its final stand.
"How many?" he asked, his voice dead.
"I don't know. A dozen. They're in the courtyard."
Heavy booted footsteps pounded onto the wooden porch. A fist slammed against the heavy front door, rattling the iron hinges.
"Open up! By order of the crown!"
Alistair reached down to his boot. A flicker of silver caught the dim light as he drew a long, vicious hunting knife. He stepped toward the swinging door of the kitchen. Beatrice grabbed his shirt, hauling him back with all the strength she possessed.
"Are you insane? You can't fight a dozen men.
I will not let them burn this place to the ground looking for me," he hissed, his eyes wild, frantic with the same terrifying energy she had seen during his night terror.
"They won't burn it if they don't find you," she snapped, shoving him toward the cellar door.
"Get down there, behind the empty casks in the back. There's a false wall my father built for smuggling brandy. Get in, pull the wood shut, and do not make a sound. If you sneeze, I will kill you myself."
"Beatrice, open the door or we'll break it off the hinges."
"Go!" she roared, shoving him violently down the first step. She slammed the cellar door shut, kicked a heavy sack of flour over the seam to hide it, and wiped her sweating hands on her apron. She took a deep breath, forcing the violent tremor out of her hands, replacing the panic with the familiar, bitter irritation of an overworked innkeeper. She marched through the swinging door just as a heavy iron axe shattered the lock on the front door. The door burst open, crashing against the interior wall. Wind and sleet howled into the taproom. Six soldiers poured in, wearing heavy blue cloaks over chainmail. They smelled of wet wool, horse sweat, and cold iron. Their captain stepped in last. He was a tall man with a broken nose and eyes like chips of flint. He looked around the empty tavern with open disgust. "Do you make a habit of ignoring the king's men, woman?" the captain barked, shaking the sleet from his cloak. "I make a habit of being in the kitchen when thugs try to chop down my door," Beatrice spat back, crossing her arms over her chest. She didn't retreat. She stood her ground, channeling every ounce of cynical fury she possessed. "Who's paying for the lock?" The captain sneered. "We are hunting a deserter, a traitor to the crown. Tall, dark hair, a scar on his jaw. He's armed and highly dangerous. Has he passed through this rot hole?" Beatrice looked at him blankly. She let her eyes drift over the soldiers, then back to the captain. She allowed a slow, mocking smile to spread across her face. "A traitor?" she drawled. "Armed and dangerous? Do I look like the kind of woman who takes in dangerous men? The only men who come through here are grain merchants who cry when they get a splinter." "Do not play games with me," the captain warned, taking a step forward. His hand rested on the pommel of his sword. "He was tracked to the ridge 2 miles east. This is the only shelter in the valley." "Then he's freezing in the woods," Beatrice said, leaning against the bar. "Or he's already dead. I haven't had a paying customer in a week, let alone a fugitive. You're welcome to look around, but if your boots track mud upstairs, you're scrubbing the floors." The captain narrowed his eyes. He scrutinized her face, looking for a tell. Beatrice stared back, a mask of bored, furious poverty. She was terrified. Her pulse was screaming in her ears. Her knees felt like water. But she had spent her entire life hiding her desperation. She was a master of the lie. The captain gestured sharply with his hand. "Search it. Every room. Leave nothing." The soldiers dispersed. They kicked open the doors to the upper rooms. Beatrice heard the sound of furniture being overturned, mattresses being slashed. They were tearing her inn apart. She forced herself not to flinch. She kept her eyes locked on the captain. "The magistrate will hear about this," she said coldly. "The magistrate is a worm," the captain replied, pacing the floorboards. "This man is a priority target, Lord Alistair Vance." Beatrice didn't react to the name, though it hit her like a physical blow. A lord. She had known it, but hearing it confirmed, spoken with such venom, solidified the terrifying reality of who she was protecting. "Lord or not, he ain't here," she said. A soldier pushed through the swinging door of the kitchen. He looked around, then kicked the sack of flour. A puff of white dust exploded into the air. Beatrice's breath caught in her throat. If he noticed the seam of the cellar door beneath the flour. "Kitchen's clear, Captain," the soldier grunted, wiping flour from his boot. "Just a pot of old stew?" Beatrice exhaled, a slow, silent release of agony. The men from upstairs returned 10 minutes later. "Nothing, sir. Dust and rats. The beds haven't been slept in for days." Alistair was meticulous. He made the oak room bed with military precision every morning. The captain scowled. He looked around the tavern one last time, his eyes lingering on Beatrice. "If you see him and you do not report it, you will hang from the rafters of this very inn. Do you understand?" "I understand that you owe me a new lock," Beatrice replied, her voice steady. The captain spat on the floorboard, turned on his heel, and marched out into the storm. His men followed. Beatrice stood entirely still until she heard the horses ride out of the courtyard, their hoofbeats swallowed by the howling wind. She waited another 5 minutes. She walked to the broken door, pushed it shut against the wind, and shoved a heavy oak table against it to keep it closed. Then her knees gave out. She collapsed against the bar, gasping for air as the adrenaline vanished, leaving her trembling violently.
She had just lied to the king's men. She had harbored a fugitive. She had risked the gallows. For a man she had known for 3 weeks. She pushed herself up, her legs shaking, and practically ran to the kitchen. She shoved the heavy flour sack aside, pulled the cellar door open, and stumbled down the stairs. The cellar was pitch black. "Alistair," she whispered, her voice cracking. Silence. "Alistair, they're gone." A faint scraping sound came from the back of the cellar behind the massive empty ale casks. The false wooden panel shifted. Alistair emerged from the shadows. He looked terrible. The tight enclosed space had triggered his panic. He was breathing heavily, his hands clenched into fists at his sides. He looked at Beatrice, his gray eyes wide in the gloom. "They're gone," she repeated, stepping forward. He didn't say a word. He closed the distance between them in 3 long strides. He didn't embrace her. He simply grabbed her shoulders, his grip desperate and bruising. He buried his face in the crook of her neck, his forehead resting against her collarbone. He was shaking. The man who had faced down an army was trembling like a leaf. Beatrice hesitated for a fraction of a second. Then, slowly, she brought her arms up and wrapped them around his broad back. She pressed her face into his coarse, damp hair. He smelled of dust, panic, and the sharp scent of cold iron. They stood there in the freezing dark of the cellar, holding onto each other like 2 drowning sailors clinging to a piece of wreckage. "I have to leave," Alistair rasped against her skin. "They will come back. I will not let them hang you for my crimes."
Beatrice's grip tightened. She pulled back slightly, forcing him to look at her in the dim light filtering down from the kitchen.
"You aren't going anywhere," she said, her voice fierce, stripped of all its cynical armor.
"Beatrice, you don't understand..."
"I understand perfectly," she interrupted, her eyes blazing. "I understand that you have a price on your head. I understand that you're broken. But this is my inn. I decide who stays and who goes. And I say you stay."
Alistair stared at her, the internal war raging in his eyes.
"Why?" he whispered. "Why risk everything for a ghost?"
Beatrice looked at the jagged scar on his jaw, at the heavy, haunted weariness that never truly left his eyes. She thought of the fixed shutter, the copper pot full of stew, the heavy gold sovereign sitting in her lockbox.
"Because," she said softly, "you're the only thing in this rotting building that isn't broken beyond repair."
The storm broke 2 days later, leaving the valley buried beneath a thick, silent blanket of snow. The world outside the Stag and Thistle was blindingly white and perfectly still. Inside, the dynamic had shifted, fundamentally and irrevocably. Alistair no longer hid in the oak room. He no longer pretended to be a ghost. He took over the heavy labor of the inn entirely. He chopped the firewood, his axe swinging in rhythmic, powerful arcs in the frozen courtyard. He repaired the leaking roof over the kitchen, climbing onto the frozen thatch with a bundle of straw and a spool of twine. He didn't speak of the soldiers, and neither did Beatrice, but a quiet, heavy vigilance settled over him. He kept his hunting knife strapped to his thigh, hidden beneath his coat, and his eyes constantly tracked the windows. It was a Sunday evening when the unspoken tension finally snapped. The taproom was closed. The fire roared in the hearth, casting warm, dancing light across the scrubbed floorboards. Beatrice sat at the table nearest the fire, attempting to mend a torn linen sheet. Her fingers were clumsy, her mind entirely focused on the man sitting across the room. Alistair was polishing the brass fittings of a harness he had found in the stables. He worked meticulously, his long fingers moving with practiced grace.
"You are staring, Mistress Beatrice," he said softly, not looking up from his work.
"I'm assessing," she's corrected, jabbing the needle into the fabric. "I'm trying to figure out how a lord knows how to mend a roof and cook lentil stew." Alistair paused. He set the brass fitting down on the table. He looked at her, his expression unreadable in the firelight.
"A lord doesn't," he said quietly. "A soldier does. I spent 10 years on the Eastern Front.
My father bought my commission when I was 16. I was supposed to command from a silk tent. Instead, I learned how men bleed in the mud. I learned that a title doesn't stop a spear, and a signet ring doesn't buy a fire when the wood is wet. He stood up, walking slowly across the room until he stood before her table.
I told you I was a deserter, he continued, his voice dropping to a low, painful rasp. I didn't tell you the rest. The village I refused to burn? It wasn't the first. It was simply the first one where I finally found the courage to say no. Beatrice stopped sewing. The needle rested in her palm. She looked up at him. The shame radiating from him was palpable, a heavy, suffocating aura. I am a coward, Beatrice, he whispered. I followed orders for a decade because I was terrified of my father, terrified of the crown. I am stained with the blood of people who look just like those farmhands you feed every morning.
He looked at her, his gray eyes pleading for judgment, begging for the condemnation he believed he deserved. Beatrice looked at him. She saw the ghosts haunting the corners of his vision. She saw the violent night terrors, the frantic, terrifying panic when he was trapped in the cellar. He wasn't a hero from a storybook. He was a deeply damaged man, crushed by the weight of a violent world. She put the needle down. She stood up, pushing her chair back. She didn't offer forgiveness. She had no right to forgive him for crimes committed against strangers. She didn't offer a platitude about him being a good man deep down. That was a lie, and they both knew it. Instead, she stepped into his space. She reached out, her hands tracing the lapels of his rough, patched coat.
You aren't a coward for surviving, she said, her voice steady, an anchor in the storm of his self-hatred. You are broken. I am broken. This inn is broken. We are all just trying to keep the roof from caving in.
Alistair exhaled a shaky breath. His hands came up, hovering hesitantly over her waist before finally settling there. His touch was incredibly gentle, a stark contrast to the violence he was capable of.
I cannot stay here, Beatrice, he said, the words tearing out of him. If the crown finds me here, if they realize you hid me,
if the crown comes back, they will find an innkeeper and her handyman, Beatrice interrupted fiercely. I have survived starvation, the plague, and Magistrate Finch. I will survive a squad of blue cloaks. She looked up, meeting his eyes. The barrier between them, the wall of cynicism and guarded secrets, finally crumbled into dust.
You asked for the cheapest room in my inn, Alistair, she whispered, her hand sliding up to cup his jaw, her thumb brushing against the jagged scar. You got the best one, and you are not checking out.
Alistair closed his eyes. A single, shuddering breath escaped his lips. He leaned down, pressing his forehead against hers. It wasn't a kiss of fiery passion. It was a physical sealing of a pact. It was two exhausted soldiers deciding to hold a fortified position together.
I will protect you, he breathed against her skin. With my last breath, Beatrice, I swear it. I don't need protecting, she murmured, wrapping her arms around his neck. I need someone to fix the hinges on the cellar door. A low, rusted sound escaped Alistair's throat. It was a genuine laugh. It sounded beautiful.
He wrapped his arms fully around her, pulling her against his chest. They stood by the fire, the heat radiating against them, entirely isolated from the freezing, dangerous world outside. They were two jagged pieces of broken glass that had somehow, impossibly, fit perfectly together.
The Stag and Thistle would never be a grand establishment. The floors would always creak, the draft would always slip beneath the door, and the ledger would always be a battle. But the heavy oak shutter no longer banged against the stone. The fires were always stoked, and the man in the oak room never left. Thank you for joining me for this raw emotional journey at the Stag and Thistle. If Beatrice and Alistair's grounded, beautifully broken story resonated with you, please hit that like button. It helps this channel survive just as much as Beatrice's lentil stew. Don't forget to share this story with someone who appreciates real, flawed romance. Most importantly, subscribe and ring the bell so you never miss another deep, immersive, historical drama. Drop a comment below.
What was your favorite sensory detail in the story? See you in the next video.